clean meeting-like garment could find. Looked okay in mirror, because it is corset-like, which holds everything in when standing up, giving one a taut hourglass shape, with, admittedly, a lace top. But have put Grazia blazer on top, though now boiling, to create pleasingly eclectic, good-luck-Charlie daughter effect. However, on glimpsing in shop window, realised outfit insane. Now am on bus. Remember also that corset-like nature of dress is torture when sitting down. One's rolls of fat are squeezed together like dough being kneaded in a food processor. Also, whole effect has something of the dominatrix about it, which is the last thing I am able to pull off when mental state would be more authentically represented by a duvet, hot water bottle, and puffle one. Plus, hair has gone into weird square boof, like Mum and Una, as if I'm wearing a hat. Did manage to find and read Ambergris Bilk's notes overnight, but now confused because the leaves in his hair seems, in Ambergris's mind, to have moved to Stockholm. Does she know George is stuck with the yacht in Hawaii because of the stoner movie falling over? And will George think I was trying to talk Ambergris back to Norway and she disguised it as Sweden? Actually, we'll ask Chloe to get some Pims as well, as don't see how can otherwise get through sports day in subglacial temperatures. Gah! Text from Rockster.
Are we having dinner tonight?
Dinner tonight? Did we say we were having dinner tonight? Oh, shit! Now have not got babysitter and... had better go to meeting. 3 p.m. Nightmare meeting. Saffron turned out to be the new screenwriter, who is, of course, 26, and has just written a pilot. Girls meets Game of Thrones meets The Killing, which is about to be picked up by HBO. Before, I thought with un-Buddhist spiteful hope, it falls over. Felt like some embarrassing evening dress with blazer and weird hat hair elephant in the room. Then accidentally put chair leg on handbag, which, unbeknownst to me, now contained Billy's noise machine from the party bag from the African drumming party and emitted a very long burp. Nobody laughed except Imogen. Saffron's opening foray, placing the script on the table in front of her, was a simpering, "It might just be me, but isn't Hedda Gabler actually spelt with one B? Gabler, not Gabler. And isn't it by Ibsen, not Chekhov?" As everyone stared at me, and I muttered something about anti-intellectualist irony, found self thinking how relaxing it would be to have dinner with Rockster and laugh about it all. Nearly texted him back saying, "I didn't know we were still having dinner tonight," but thought it sounded petulant. So instead, as soon as attention was diverted to Saffron's nauseating theories about how to ruin my oeuvre, I furtively texted, "Chicken pie at my place? Rockster."
About 8:30.
Instantly regretted saying chicken pie, as did not have either chicken pie or means to make chicken pie. Also, legs were probably hairy, but could not check us in meeting. Was too weak, depressed and bewildered to get into the discussion about Stockholm versus Hawaii, so just said that maybe we should let Saffron do a draft and see how it comes off the page, at which George had to run off to get a plane to Albuquerque. 7:30 p.m.
Ugh.
I rushed home from meeting, managing to squeeze in buying mountain of red and green peppers, as did not have yellow, and purchase of chicken pie from overpriced deli. Then managed to pick up both children just in time. As we were driving home, Billy said, "Mummy." "Yes," I said vaguely, trying to dodge a cyclist who had just veered out in front of me.
"It's Father's Day on Sunday. We made cards." "We did too," said Mabel.
As soon as I could, I pulled over and cut the engine. I wiped my face with both hands, rubbing my eyes for a second, then turned to look at them. "Can I see the cards?" They scrabbled in their bags. Mabel's was of a family with a daddy, a mummy, a little girl, and a little boy. Billy's drawing was contained in a heart, with a little boy playing a game with his father. It said, "Daddy."
"Can we post them to Daddy?" said Mabel.
When we got home, I got out all the photos of them with Mark. Billy in a little suit, the same as Mark's, standing together, the same look on their faces, exactly the same pose, one hand in the trouser pocket. Mark holding Mabel up when she was newborn, like a little toy in her onesie. We talked about Daddy, and how I was sure he knew what we were doing, and he was loving us still. Then we went out and posted the cards. Mabel had addressed hers, Daddy, Heaven, Space. In the midst of feeling guilty about everything else, I felt guilty about traumatizing the postman. On the way home, Billy said, I wish we lived in a normal family, like Rebecca. That's not a normal family, I said. They never... Finn has Xbox in the week, said Billy. Can we have SpongeBob now? Said Mabel. They were really tired. They fell asleep straight away after their bath. 8 p.m. Roxter will be here in half an hour. I'm going to have a bath and rewash hair, put makeup on, and try to find something suitable to wear for evening with person who may be about to either break up with me or produce an engagement ring. 8:10 p.m. In bath now. Gah! Telephone. 8:15 p.m. Jumped out of the bath, wrapped self in towel, and grabbed phone to hear deep, powerful voice of George from Greenlight. Okay, we're just on the tarmac in Denver, so look, that went well today, but we don't want you to lose Santa Fe. But it's in Stockholm, I said, suddenly realizing that I hadn't put the chicken pie in. Hang on, we're disembarking. We don't want you to lose your voice. What was he talking about? I hadn't lost my voice. Had I? Stockholm. No, I'm transferring to Santa Fe. Was he talking to me now, or the air hostess? So we want you to header it up. Header it up? What could he possibly mean? Maybe he was talking to the pilot. No, sorry. I meant Albuquerque. George, I yelled. Aren't you meant to be in Albufeira? What? What? The phone went dead. 8:20 p.m. Just ran downstairs to put the chicken pie in the oven, and the landline rang. Okay, what was that about Albufeira? George again. It was a joke, I said, trying to open the chicken pie with my teeth. I can't concentrate on what you're saying because you're always on a plane or some other mode of transport. Can't we just talk about things calmly for 2 minutes with you in one place? I said, tucking the phone under my chin, opening the oven door with one hand and shoving the pie in with the other. I can't work with you rushing about like this. I need to concentrate. George suddenly switched into a purring, sensual, soothing voice I hadn't heard before. Okay, okay. We think you're a genius. Once this trip is over, I'm going to be in the office all the time, all right? You just need to put back the special header voice we love so much into all the header lines when Saffron's finished with them, and you'll have my undivided, calm attention. Okay, yes, I said frantically, wondering if I could glaze the pie before I dried my hair. 8:40 p.m. Phew, thank goodness Roxter is a bit late. Everything is fine. Hair is normal. Chicken pie is not only in oven, but glazed with beaten egg to give pleasing air of some form of cooking. Downstairs is looking all right, and lit by candles. And think silk shirt is okay, and not too slutty, as we have been sleeping together for months, and also everything else is either too uncomfortable or in the wash. Oh, God, I'm so tired. Think we'll just have little sleep on sofa for a few minutes. 9:15 p.m. Ah! Is 9:15 and Roxter is not here. Have I slept through the doorbell? Just texted Roxter. Fell asleep. Did I miss the doorbell? Jonesy, I'm so sorry. I ended up having to have a curry with colleagues after work and now the buses are really slow. Should be about 10 more minutes. Stared at the text. Mind reeling. A curry? Buses slow. Colleagues? Roxter doesn't say colleagues. And what about the chicken pie? What was going on? 9:45 p.m. Roxter is still not here. Texted, estimated ETA? Roxter, about 15 minutes. So sorry, darling. Farting Sports Day. Thursday, 13th of June, 2013. £136, bloody chicken pie plus egg glaze. Alcohol unit 7, counting last night. Hangovers 1, cataclysmic. Temperature 90 degrees. Peppers chopped 12. Melon balls consumed 35. Wrinkles appeared during course of day 45. Number of times used word fart in text to Rockster, 9. Undignified. Awoke at first light, feeling everything was okay. Then suddenly glimpsed the tip of the iceberg of the train wreck of last night. Doorbell rang at 10 p.m, at which I sprayed myself with perfume and answered the door in more or less nothing but the white shirt. Rockster said, you look so nice, and started kissing me all the way down the stairs. We ate the chicken pie and downed the bottle of red wine he'd bought. He said I was to sit down on the sofa and relax while he washed up. I watched him, thinking how lovely everything was, but still vaguely wondering why and how he'd managed to eat a curry and then a chicken pie and not feel or look like he had eaten a Bambi. Then he came over and knelt at my feet. "I have something to say," he said. "What?" I said, smiling at him sleepily. "I have never said this to any woman before. I heart you, Jonesy. I really, seriously heart you." "Oh," I said, looking at him slightly crazily, one eye closed and one open. "And if it wasn't for the age difference," he went on, "I'd be down on one knee. I really would. You're the best woman I've ever met, and I've hearted every minute we've had together. But it's different for you, because you've got your kids, and I haven't got my life sorted out. This is just not going anywhere. I really need to meet someone my own age, and I can't do that unless I'm able to do that. That make any sense whatsoever?" Maybe, if I had been less tired, I'd have tried to talk it through properly. But instead, I immediately turned into girl guide mode, launching into a cheery speech about how, of course, he was right. He must find someone his own age, but it had been marvellous for both of us, and we'd both learned and grown so much. Rockster was staring at me with a haunted expression. "But can we still be friends?" he said. "Of course," I gushed joyfully. "Do you think we'll be able to see each other without tearing each other's clothes off?" "Of course," I said merrily. "Anyway, best be getting off to bed. Sports day tomorrow." I saw him out with a fixed, cheery smile. Then, instead of doing the sensible thing and texting Rebecca and asking her to come over, or calling Talitha or Tom or Jude or anyone really, I got into bed and sobbed for 2 hours until I fell asleep. And now, oh shit, it's 6 a.m., the kids will be up in an hour, and I have to take chopped vegetables and both of them to sports day on half a bottle of red wine and 4 hours sleep in the now freakishly blazing heat. 6 p.m. Managed to get everyone and everything into the car on time, drive to the sports ground, and then get everybody and everything out of the car by pretending was soldier in a war combined with the Dalai Lama. Billy and Nabel had forgotten all about the Father's Day trauma and were wildly jolly, running off immediately to charge around with their friends, mercifully forgetting all about their melting down mother as well. Unfortunately, however, in the midst of laying out picnic rugs and chopped vegetables, said melting down mother was suddenly overcome with unzen-like rage at Rockster for putting her into such a meltdown and sent off a blistering texting rant which went as follows. "Rockster, it was fartingly manipulative and selfish to do that like that last night after you'd pretended to marry me and eaten my glazed chicken pie. And you can just stuff your chicken pie and full English breakfast and curry up your own bum and go fart at yourself, you selfish fart bum." Broke off briefly to graciously pour out some of my giant bottle of Pimm's for Fazia and the other mothers. "You fartingly don't have anyone to think about except your farting self at the moment, and all I can say is, when you have a baby with some saffron who will probably not be able to afford on-tap nannies, you're going to get a bit of a shock. And if receiving a texting rant makes you feel bad, then good, because so do I. And I'm at a farting sports day. Then turned back to the group, commenting flatteringly upon the delicious picnic, before returning to my text, with an apologetic smile, suggesting that I was a very busy and important businesswoman, and not just texting farts to a toy boy who had dumped me, unequivocally, for being too old. The phone vibrated. Rockster. In my defence, I didn't fart once last night, despite having just eaten a curry. Me. Well, I'm just sending the most giant fart with extra stink right out of my bum at sports day, so get ready. Quickly checked the children. Billy was running around maniacally with a group of boys, and Mabel and another small girl were cheerfully saying obscurely mean things to each other. Then returned to my texting exchange. Rockster. How do you add extra stink to a fart? Quickly to Parsnip. Me. Spend the evening with a fucking farter. Rockster. I just farted into a taxi and told it to go to the junior branch sports ground. Me. Yes, well, it's probably airborne by now, with the strength of your fart velocity. Enjoying supporting the sporting activities. It was Mr. Wallacker. Positively sneering down at my iPhone. Was just trying to get up, which, because I've been sitting on my knees for so long, involved crashing onto all fours when the starter pistol went off for the first race. In that split second, I saw Mr. Wallacker freeze, and his hand whipped to his hip as if for a gun. I could see the powerful body tensed beneath his sports shirt, the muscle in his cheek working, eyes casing the playing fields. As the egg and spoon racers wobbled off the starting blocks, he blinked, as if remembering himself, then glanced round sheepishly to see if anyone had noticed. "Everything all right?" I said, raising one eyebrow in an attempt to mimic his usual supercilious manner, which may not have been entirely successful, owing to my still being on all fours. "Absolutely," he said, his cool blue eyes levelly meeting mine. "Just a slight issue I have with, spoons." Then he turned and jogged off towards the egg and spoon finishing line. I stared after him. What was that about? Was he delusional, dissatisfied with his mundane life and filled with Bond fantasies? Or was he the sort of person who dresses up as Oliver Cromwell and fights pretend battles at the weekends? As the sporting events got underway, I put the iPhone away and started to focus. "Come on, Mabel," I said. "It's Billy's long jump." As they measured Billy's jump, a cheer went up and he leaped into the air. "I told you, damn it," said Mabel. "What?" I said. "They do have tape measuring in the quintathlon."
"Yes, it is an increasingly popular athletic category." It was Mr. Wallacker, and teetering behind him, a strange, out-of-place woman I hadn't seen before.
"Could I possibly have a drop of that pins?"
She was wearing a white, expensive-looking crocheted dress and high-heeled mules with gold things on. Her face had that slightly peculiar look which people have when they've had work done, which obviously seems fine when they're staring at the mirror, but looks weird as soon as they move their face.
"Pins," she said to Mr. Wallacker. "Dear? Dear?"
Could this possibly be Mr. Wallacker's wife? How had that one happened? Mr. Wallacker looked uncharacteristically discombobulated.
"Bridget, this is, Mrs. Sarah. Don't worry, I'll do the pims. You go to Billy," he said quietly.
"Come on, Mabel," I said, as Billy galloped over like an exuberant puppy, bits of shirt and sash flying in the wind, and buried his head in my dress. As we started packing up the things before the prize-giving, the weird, drunk Mr. Wallacker wife teetered over to us again.
"Could I have some more pims?" she slurred.
I began to think I quite liked her, really. It's always so nice to meet someone more badly behaved than oneself. Then she said,
"Thanks, Sue," peering at me with her surprised eyes. "Not often I meet someone your age who's still got a real face."
Someone who's still got a real face. During the prize giving, I couldn't help regurgitating the phrase, "Someone your age with a real face." What did she mean? That I was daring to go around without having Botox? Oh, God. Oh, God. Maybe Talitha was right. I was going to die of loneliness because I was so wrinkly. No wonder Roxter had dumped me. As soon as the prize-giving was over, and Billy and Mabel absorbed with their friends, I dived into the clubhouse to recover my composure, stopping in appalled dismay at a poster on the notice board. Over 50s trip to Hastings. And another. Over 50s club. Every Monday, 9:30 to 12:30. Bingo, refreshments, raffle, coach trips, Christmas Day lunch, tea dancing, advice and support. Furtively typing the advice and support number into my iPhone, I stumbled into the ladies and surveyed myself under the harsh, unforgiving light of an unshaded bulb. Mr. Wallacker's wife was right. The skin around my eyes was becoming, even as I watched, a mass of wrinkles. Chin and jowls were sagging, neck like a turkey, marionette lines rushing from my mouth to my chin in manner of Angela Merkel. As I stared, I could almost see my hair turning into a tight grey perm. It had finally happened. I was an old lady. The Deep Freeze. Tuesday, 18th of June, 2013. £136, including £1 of botulism. I mean, lots of people do Botox, don't they? It's not like having a facelift. Exactly, said Talitha when she gave me the number. It's just like going to the dentist. Went down into basement off Harley Street, feeling like was going to Backstreet Abortionist. I don't want to look weird, I said, trying to replace the image of Mr. Wallacker's wife with that of Talitha. No, said the strange foreign-sounding Botox doctor. To many people's looks weird. Felt tiny pricking sensation in forehead. Just going to do your mouse now? You are going to love it. You don't do your mouse, the face start to droop so you look miserable, like the queen. I thought about this. Actually, it might be true. The queen does quite often look as if she's unhappy or disapproving, and she probably isn't really. Maybe the queen should have Botox in her mouth. Came out, blinking in the lights of Harley Street, and grimacing my face as the doctor had told me to. Bridget! I looked across the road, startled. It was Wony, wife of Cosmo. As she hurried across, I blinked at her. Wony looked different. Could she possibly have had hair extensions? Her hair was a good 6 inches longer than it had been at Talitha's party, and dark brown, not grey. And instead of her usual high-necked Duchess dress, she was wearing a fitted peach frock with a beautiful neckline which showed off her waist, plus high heels. "You look fantastic," I said. She smiled. "Thank you. It was, well, what you said last year at Magda's drinks, and then after Talitha's party, I thought... And Talitha told me where to get my hair done and had some Botox, but don't tell Cosmo. And how is it going with your young man? I've just been sitting next to one at a charity lunch. It's absolutely marvellous, isn't it? Doing a bit of flirting. What could I say? Telling her he dumped me for being too old would be like telling the troops in the First World War trenches that it looked as though the Germans were winning. There's everything to be said for the younger man, I said. You look fabulous. And she teetered off, giggling, and I could swear, at 2 in the afternoon, slightly drunk. Well, at least something good has come out of it all, I muttered to myself, and her Botox looked great, so maybe mine would too. Friday, 21st of June, 2013. Remaining consonants able to pronounce. 0. 2:30 p.m. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, something really weird is happening to my mouth. It's all swelling up inside. 2:35 p.m. Just looked in mirror. Lips are sticking out. Mouth is puffed up and sort of paralysed.
2:40 p.m. Billy's school just rang about the bassoon lessons and cannot speak properly. Cannot easily say P's or B's or F's. What am I going to do? I'm going to be like this for next 3 months.
2:50 p.m. Have started drooling. Cannot control mouth, so drool is coming out of side of mouth like, ironically enough given objective was to look younger, stroke victim in old people's home. Have to keep dabbing at it with a tissue.
2:55 p.m. Called up Talitha and tried to F-men.
But it shouldn't do that. You should go back. Something must have gone wrong. It's probably an allergic reaction. It'll wear off.
3:15 p.m. Have got to do school run. Actually, it will be fine. We'll simply drape a scarf around my mouth. People don't notice specific bits of other people. They see the whole.
3:30 p.m. Collected Mabel with scarf draped around mouth like masked raider. Took scarf off gratefully in car and turned round to do usual complex body contorting movement in order to get the seatbelt into the thing. At least Mabel hasn't noticed, munching happily away at her snack.
3:45 p.m.
Ugh, traffic is terrible. Why do people drive these enormous SUV things in London? It's like once they're in one, they think they're driving a tank, and everyone has to get out of their... Mummy!
Yes, Mabel?
Your mouth looks all funny.
Oh, I said, successfully avoiding consonants.
Why is your mouth all funny?
Attempted to say because, but fuffing noise came out.
Because I... Mummy, why are you talking funny?
It's fine, Mabel. This above is a bit poorly.
What did you say, Mother?
It's all good, daughter,
I managed. You see, if I can just stick to vowels and guttural and sibilant consonants, it's
fine.
4 p.m. Put scarf round mouth again and took worried-looking Mabel by her little hand into the junior branch. Billy was playing football. Tried to yell, but how could I say
bleep?
Oi!
I attempted to shout.
Illy!
Billy glanced up briefly, then carried on playing football.
Illy!
How was I going to get him out of the playground? And they were having such a nice time running about, but then had only got 5 minutes left on the car, because it was in a loading bay.
Illy!
I yelled.
Everything okay?
I turned. It was Mr. Wallacker. A muffler. Are you cold? Doesn't feel very cold to me, he said, rubbing his hands as if to check out the general temperature. He was wearing a blue businessman-type shirt, and I could sense his lean, annoyingly fit body through it.
Dentist.
I'm sorry?
I quickly moved the scarf and said,
Dentist,
again, and put the scarf back. There was a quick flicker of amusement in his eyes.
Mummy's mouth all funny, Mabel said.
Poor mummy, said Mr. Wallacker, bending down to Mabel. What's going on with your shoes? Have you got them on the wrong feet? Oh, God. He was so preoccupied with Botox trauma, did not notice. Mr. Wallacker was swapping them efficiently.
Billy won't come, said Mabel, in her deep, gruff voice, looking at him with her grave expression.
Really? Mr. Wallacker got to his feet.
Billy?
He called down authoritatively. Billy looked up, startled. Mr. Wallacker jerked his head to beckon him, at which Billy obediently trotted through the gate towards us. Your mum was waiting for you. You knew that. Next time your mum is waiting for you, you come straight away, got it?
Yes, Mr. Wallacker.
He turned to me. Are you okay? Suddenly, horrifyingly, felt my eyes filling with tears. Billy, Mabel, your mum's been to the dentist and she's feeling poorly. Now I want you to be a little lady and a little gentleman and be nice to her.
Yes, Mr. Wallacker,
they said, like automatons, putting out their hands to hold mine.
Very good. And Mrs. Darcy?
Yes, Mr. Wallacker.
I wouldn't do that again if I were you. You looked all right in the first place. When we reached our road, I suddenly realized I was driving on autopilot and had got the whole way home without noticing anything.
Mummy?
Yes, I said, thinking, they know. They know. We're on terribly flimsy ground, and their mother is a Botoxed, failed cougar idiot who's going to crash the car and doesn't know what she's doing, what she's supposed to be doing, or how she's supposed to do it. And they're going to be taken into care by the social services and...
Do dinosaurs have cold blood?
Yes, no,
I said as I parked the car. Do they?
I mean, what are they? Are they reptiles? Are they dolphins?
Mummy, how long are you going to carry on talking like this? Can we have spag bog?
Said Mabel.
Yes,
I said, parking the car outside the house. When we got inside, it was all warm and cosy, and I soon had the spag bog, supermarket ready prepared and possibly containing horse, but still bubbling on the stove. They were sitting on the sofa, listening to the annoying American cartoons where actors talk in high-pitched hysterical voices, but looking so sweet. Leaving the horse spaghetti, I sat down with them and pulled them into a hug knot, and I buried my frozen face in their messy heads and soft necks, feeling their little hearts beating against mine, and thought how lucky I was just to have them. After a while, Billy raised his head.
Mummy,
he whispered softly, a faraway look in his eye. I murmured, heart overflowing with love.
The spaghetti's on fire.
Oh, dear. Had left spaghetti in the pan with the dry bits leaning over the edge at a sharp angle, intending to squidge them down when the other end softened, but somehow they had tilted down and caught fire.
I will get fire extinguish, said Mabel calmly,
as if this were an everyday occurrence, which, of course, it is not.
No,
I said, berserk, grabbing a tea towel and throwing it on the pan, at which the tea towel also caught fire and the smoke alarm went off. Suddenly felt the splash of cold water, turned to see Billy pouring a jug of cold water over the whole thing, extinguishing the flames and leaving a smouldering but extinguished mess on the cooker. He was grinning delightedly.
Can we eat it now?
Mabel, too, was looking thrilled.
Can we toast marshmallows?
So, once Billy had turned the smoke alarm off, we did toast marshmallows, on the fire, in the fireplace, and it was one of our nicest evenings. That's what friends are for. Saturday, 22nd of June, 2013. £136. Calories, 3,844. Packets of grated mozzarella consumed, 2. Boyfriends, 0. Possibility of boyfriends, 0. Combined alcohol units consumed by self and the friends, 47.
Well, at least she's not a born-again virgin, said Tom. Rather the opposite, if you ask me. More like a born-again nymphomaniac with a frozen face. Have we run out of wine?
There's some more in the fridge, I said, getting up. But you see...
Tom, do be quiet, darling, chided Talitha. Her face looks really, really good now the drooling's stopped.
The key thing is she has to get over the toy boy, said Jude, who was still going out with wildlife photographer man.
It's not just that, it's...
I tried to get in.
It's the ego. It's the ego which is at stake.
Tom was pretending to be professional, but was completely drunk.
It's not a rejection. A person who goes from one extreme to the other like that isn't rejecting you. He's just caught between his heart and his head and...
Bridget, I did warn you that one must never, ever fall in love with a toy boy, interrupted Talitha. One has to be in control, otherwise the whole dynamic becomes a total disaster. I forbid you to re-engage with him. Tom, darling, could you just fix me a teensy-weensy vodka with lots of ice and a splash of soda?
He's not going to re-engage with me. I sent him a texting rant about farting, I said. Number one, said Talitha, he will re-engage, because his exit was a bang, not a whimper. And number two, you are not to re-engage, or it will become a whimper. Once a man has dumped you, taking him back is a sign of low self-esteem and desperation, and he will do nothing but fuck you around.
But Mark took me back and... Rockster, said Tom, is not Mark.
At this, I burst into silent, gasping sobs.
Oh, God, said Jude. We have to find her someone else and quickly. I'm setting her up on OkCupid. What shall I put as her age?
No, don't, I sobbed. I have to take the stick, like it says in Zen and the Art of Falling in Love. I have to be punished. I've neglected the children, and they're fine. You've gone mad. Where have you put your iPhoto library?
Jude, said Tom, leave her alone. Leave her to me. I am professional. I am a doctor of psychology.
There was silence for a moment.
Thanks, said Tom. You are dealing with six things in a relationship. There's fantasy about you. There's fantasy about the relationship. Your fantasy about them. Their fantasy about your fantasy about themselves. How many is that? Oh, their fantasy about them.
Then Tom rose sententiously, walked calmly, if unsteadily, to the fridge, returned with a packet of chocolate buttons and a bottle of Chardonnay, and pulled a packet of Silk Cut out of his jacket pocket.
Some things never change, he said. Nows, opens your mouth and takes your medicines. That's a good girl.
When I woke up in the morning, I was all tucked up with a selection of soft toys, a copy of Thelma and Louise, and a note from all three of them saying, we will always love you. However, when I picked up my phone, there was also a text from Jude with an OkCupid login and password. The Yawning Void. Monday, 24th of June, 2013. £135. Texts from Rockster, zero. Emails from Rockster, zero. Phone calls from Rockster, zero. Voicemails from Rockster, zero. Tweets from Rockster, zero. Twitter messages from Rockster, zero. 9:15 p.m. Children are asleep. Oh, God, I'm so lonely. I miss Rockster. Now that the bubble has burst, and I have realized Mark is still gone, the children still have no father, and all the other complicated, unfixable things, I just quite simply and straightforwardly miss Rockster. It's so weird going from total closeness to... nothing. Total cyberspace emptiness. The text is silent. No emails from Rockster. He no longer tweets. I cannot get on his Facebook, because to do that I would have to join Facebook, which I know is emotional suicide, and then ask to be his friend on Facebook, and then find loads of pictures of him snogging 30-year-olds. I've reread the old messages and emails, and there is just nothing left of Roxby McDuff now at all. Had not really stopped to think how much Rockster meant to me, because I really was being Buddhist and staying in the moment. Had not realized we were building a little world together. The farts, the vomit, jokes about food, and our favourite pubs and the barnacle's penis. Every time something funny happens, want to text it to Rockster. And then realize with cold, lurching remembrance that Rockster doesn't want to hear about all the funny little things anymore, because he's doubtless hearing funny details of the life of someone who is 23 and likes Lady Gaga. 10 p.m. Just got into bed. Cold, empty, boring bed. When am I ever going to have sex again? Or wake up with someone as young and beautiful as Rockster? 10:05 p.m. Fuck him with his fucking curry. I absolutely do not care about Rockster any more whatsoever. Pah! He was simply a curry-eating... cat.
Italo Gigolo. Have deleted him from contacts and will not correspond with or see or ask to see him ever again, ever. He is deleted. 10:06 p.m. But I love him. Tuesday, 25th of June, 2013. Number of mean texts made up to send to Rockster in case Rockster texts me, 33. 9:15 p.m. Oh, God, I'm so lonely. Keep thinking maybe Rockster will text that we should have a drink and keep making up imaginary haughty texts in reply. I'm sorry, who is this? I'm sorry, but I'm afraid that might prevent me from meeting people who match my own emotional maturity, glamorous social life, and stylish designer outfits. Or, but what if a 30-year-old walks past in the middle who likes farting and vomiting? Wednesday, 26th of June, 2013. 9:15 p.m. Oh, God, I'm so lonely. 9:16 p.m. Have just had brilliant idea. Will text Leather Jacket Man. 9:30 p.m. Texting exchange went as follows. Me. Hi, what's up? Haven't seen you for a while. Fancy getting together for a catch-up. 10:30 p.m. Leather Jacket Man.
Hey, great to hear from you. Lots of changes this end, starting with, I'm getting married in 2 weeks' time. But maybe we could get together beforehand.
Thursday, 27th of June, 2013. 9:15 p.m.
Oh, God, I'm so lonely.
Maybe we'll call Daniel and see if he will take me out to cheer me up. 11 p.m. Daniel has not replied. Is not like Daniel. Maybe he is currently getting married. Friday, 28th of June, 2013. 3 a.m. Billy just got into my bed, sobbing. I think he'd had a bad dream. He put his arms round me, all hot and sweaty, and clung to me. I need you, Mummy. He does. They do. And there's no one else. I can't afford to get into a mess like this, trying to fill up a void with stupid men. Come on. Pull yourself together. 7 a.m. Woke up sleepily and looked at Billy, warm and exquisitely beautiful on my pillow. Started giggling, remembering wailing self-pityingly about Rockster.
When am I ever going to wake up with someone as young and beautiful as that again?
You see? Simple. Even younger and more beautiful. Just the way they are. Friday, 28th of June, 2013, continued. 10 a.m. Starting to feel worried about Daniel. For all his, well, Danielism, since Mark died, he has always got back straight away if I call. Oh, telephone. 10:30 a.m. Had forgotten about conference call with George from Greenlight, Imogen and Damien.
Right, we're all in the office, you'll be pleased to hear, George began. Now, here's the thing.
There was sploshing in the background.
If you talk to Saffron about the pages, you are not to give her any idea that you are not 100% in love with Stock.
George, I said suspiciously, where are you? And what is that sloshing noise?
In the office. It's just coffee. Okay, Ambergris is into Stockholm, so don't...
There was an odd, rubbery, slithering squeak. A giant splash. I mean, really, like something huge had fallen into a large body of water. A muffled shout, then silence.
Right, said Imogen. Shall we see what happened there and call you back?
11 a.m. Just called Talitha to see if she had spoken to Daniel lately. Oh, God, she said. Haven't you heard? The thing is, Daniel has always had addictive tendencies, which have got worse as he has got older. There was a period when everyone was saying, I'm so worried about Daniel, in judgmental voices,
as he behaved increasingly outrageously at dinner parties. Various glamorous women tried to fix him, until eventually he was shipped off to a treatment facility in Arizona, and returned looking fresh-faced and a little sheepish. As far as we all knew, he was fine. But it seems a recent breakup with the latest glamorous woman catapulted him into a dazzling spree, taking him through the entire contents of his 1930s cocktail cabinet in a single weekend. He was found in a terrible state last Monday morning by his cleaning lady, and now he is in the drugs and drink ward of the same hospital where I went to the obesity clinic. Oh, God. Oh, God. And I let Billy and Mabel stay the night with him. 11:30 a.m. Imogen just called back. It seems that George, rather than, as claimed, being in his office slurping coffee, was in a dinghy on the Irrawaddy River, to which he had retreated from his luxury indigenous-style houseboat in order to get a signal. Somehow, the swell from a passing executive speedboat had unbalanced the dinghy, catapulting George into the murky waters of the Irrawaddy, shortly followed by his iPhone. George was fine, but the loss of the iPhone was catastrophic. I decided to leave Greenlight to deal with the aftermath and hotfoot it round to see Daniel. 2 p.m. Just back. Scary. St. Catherine's Hospital is a bewildering visual mix of Victorian prison, 1960s doctor's surgery, and the Yemen. I wandered, unfocused, until I found the right block, bought Daniel newspapers in the gift shop, and a card with a duck on it, saying, "Stay afloat," adding in pen, "Dirty bastard." Then impulsively put inside, "Wherever you go, and whatever you do, I'll always love you." One doesn't want to enable, but I could imagine everyone was going to come in and tick him off. The ward was a locked ward. Pressed on the green button. Eventually, a lady in a burqa appeared and let me in. "I'm here to see Daniel Cleaver." She didn't seem to recognize the name, just another one on her clipboard. "Over there to the left, first bed behind the curtain." I recognized Daniel's bag and his coat, but the bed was empty. Had Daniel done a runner? I started trying to tidy up. Then a strange tramp-like figure appeared, in Winsiette hospital pajamas, unshaven, with wild hair and a black eye.
"Who are you?" he said suspiciously.
"It's me, Bridget."
"Jones," he said,
as if a light bulb had come on in his head. Just as quickly it went out, and he stumbled over to the bed.
"You could at least have told me you were coming. I'd have cleaned up a bit."
He lay down and closed his eyes. "Silly ass," I said. He fumbled for my hand. He was making a very strange noise. "What happened? Why can't you breathe?" A flicker came into his eye, a glimpse of the old Daniel.
"Well, the thing is, Jones," he said, pulling me over to him, "went on a bit of a bender, to tell you the truth. Pretty much drank through everything. I delightedly fastened upon what I took to be a bottle of creme de menthe, you know, the green stuff. Drank the whole thing down." His face broke into the familiar rueful smirk. "It turned out to be very liquid." We both started shaking with laughter. I know it was a potentially tragic situation, but it was pretty funny. But then Daniel started choking, making a wheezing noise, and bubbles started appearing out of his mouth. You could see exactly what had happened. It's like when you run out of dishwasher tablets and think it would be a good idea to put washing up liquid in instead, and it all froths up inside. The nurse rushed over and sorted him out. Then he picked up the card and opened it. For a second, he looked as if he was going to cry. Then he shoved it back down on the table, just as a glamorous leggy blonde appeared. "Daniel," said the blonde, in a way which made me want to flick my hair at her and give her nits. "Look at you. You should be ashamed of yourself. It has to stop." She picked up the card. "What's this? Is this from you?" she said accusingly. "You see, this is his problem. All his bloody friends, dear old Daniel. It's just completely enabling."
"Best be off, then," I said, getting up.
"No, Jones, don't," said Daniel. "Oh, please," snorted the girl, just as Talitha appeared,
carrying a basket of edible gift items wrapped in cellophane and topped with a big bow. "You see? You see?" said the glamorous girl. "This is exactly what I mean."
"And what do you mean by that, sugar?" said Talitha. "Who exactly are you, and what does this have to do with you? I have known Daniel for 20 years, and slept with him on and off for most of them." Almost burst out, "What? Was Talitha sleeping with Daniel when I was sleeping with Daniel?" And then I thought, what's the point? I made my excuses and left, thinking, really, after a certain age, people are just going to do what they're going to do, and you're either going to accept them as they are, or you're not. Unsure, however, if should altogether leave the children in Daniel's charge again, at least until he's been back to rehab, or can conclusively distinguish a fork from a hairbrush. Let's Face the Music and Tea Dance. Saturday, 29th of June, 2013. Just set off for Hampstead Heath, and had to come back, as seemed like giant bucket of water was being emptied on our heads. Weather has been disgusting this summer. Rain, 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 and freezing cold, as if there is no summer, is completely intolerable. Sunday, 30th of June, 2013. Gah! Is suddenly boiling hot. Don't have sunblock or hats, and is too hot to stay outside. How are we supposed to manage in this unbearable heat? Is completely intolerable. Monday, 1st of July, 2013. 6 p.m. Right. I'm going to stop being so sorry for myself, lest I end up accidentally drinking fairy liquid. The end of the school year is almost here, with its absorbing matrix of plays, school trips, pajama days, emails about presents for the teachers, including a very strict one from Perfect Nicolette, about everyone sticking to chipping in for the John Lewis vouchers and not buying their own Jo Malone candles, and generating the most unfeasible number of mass emails of all, Billy's summer concert. Billy is going to play I'd Do Anything from Oliver as a solo on his bassoon. The concert has been organised by Mr. Wallacker, who seems now to be including half the music department in his military-style takeover, and is to be held at sunset in the grounds of Capthorpe House, a stately home up the A11. Presumably, Mr. Wallacker will be dressed as Oliver Cromwell, and his so-nice-to-meet-someone-with-a-real-face wife will have had 4 pints of extra filler put in her face to celebrate. Oops, back in the knife box, Miss Sharp. Must read more of The Little Book of Buddhism. We do not possess our home, our children, or even our own body. They are only given to us for a short time to treat with care and respect. Oh, no. I still haven't made the dentist appointment for Billy and Mabel. The longer I leave it, the more I daren't, since clearly their teeth are now riddled with holes. They will end up like extras in Pirates of the Caribbean, and it will be all my fault. But at least I'm treating own body like a temple. I'm going to Zumba. 8 p.m. Just back. Usually love Zumba, with young, dark, long-haired Spanish couple taking it in turns to lead numbers, flinging their hair about, stomping angrily like horses, transporting one into a world of Barcelona, or possibly Basque Coast nightclubs, and firelit gypsy encampments of undetermined national extraction. But this week, the thrilling duo were replaced by a zingy-pingy woman with a blonde fringe, a bit like Olivia Newton-John in Greece. Exotically sexual Zumba moves were strangely juxtaposed with gay, determined grin, as if to say, super-duper, nothing sexual or dirty about this at all. On top of that, the grinning woman made us do not only hand-rolling moves, but also imaginary shaking-off-water-from-wet-hands moves, not to mention starbursts. As whole Catalan nightclub fantasy collapsed like House of Cards, looked around to realise class was peopled not by wild gypsy youths, but a collection of women, whom members of an unenlightened, male-dominated patriarchal society might describe as middle-aged. Have sinking feeling that very concept of attending Zumba may be linked to attempt to
to relive long-gone days of sexual possibility, as evidenced by St. Oswald's house. Even there, Zumba has entirely replaced the concept of tea-dancing. Staggered upstairs, to somewhat galling sight of tall, thin without Zumba, Chloe, cradling children, like Leonardo da Vinci's Madonna, and reading The Wind in the Willows. Children looked up excitedly, the usual post-Zumba spectacle of me crawling up red in the face on verge of heart attack. As soon as Chloe left, Billy and Mabel dispensed with The Wind in the Willows, to egg self on into hilarious game of throwing contents of laundry basket downstairs. By time had got them to sleep, cleared up overexcited vomit, etc., was so exhausted that stuffed down two giant fried turkey croquettes, cold, and a 3-inch wedge of banana cake. Resolved to enroll in proper salsa or meringue class as soon as possible, because, actually, airily, it is the purer form of Latin dance which interests me. Merengue, I mean, not meringue. Getting online. Tuesday, 2nd of July, 2013. £133, thank you, Zumba tea dancing. Dating sites investigated, 13. Dating profiles read, 87. Attractive dating profiles read, 0. Dating profiles set up, 2. Number of disastrous relationships Jude has formed online, 17. Number of promising relationships Jude has formed online, 1. Encouraging. 11 p.m. Jude, who is still going out with wildlife photographer man, just came round after the kids were asleep, determined to make me get online. I watched her clicking on dating sites with messianic frenzy and making lists. Scuba diver. Likes Hotel Costes. Read 100 Years of Solitude. Yeah, right. You see, you have to make notes, Bridge. Otherwise you'll mix them all up when you message them. Don't you ever want to just, like, give up? I said. No. Or I would have ended up sucking lollipops with a faraway look in my eye. Realized with embarrassment, I had picked up a lollipop and was sliding it in and out of my mouth. The thing is, Bridge, it's a percentages game. Jude, having burst through the glass ceiling of the financial world, is, I suppose, bound to see it in these terms. You can't afford to take anything personally. You're going to get stood up, you're going to get 18 stone people whose pictures are of someone else, but with enough experience and skill, you'll weed through that dross. We then went into a greatest hits medley of the online dross Jude had successfully weeded through to find wildlife photographer man. Sexual humiliation man, of course. Married with baby man, who took Jude out, snogged her, then included her in the global text saying his wife had had a baby. And skydiver graphic designer man, who did turn out to be a graphic designer, but also, it emerged, a devout Muslim, who didn't believe in sex before marriage, but bizarrely, also liked to spend his weekends Morris dancing. And somewhere, Jude said, somewhere out there, it'll just take one click and you'll be home. But who would want a 50-something single mother with 2 small children? Take a look, she said, signing me in for a free trial on singleparentmix.com. They're just normal people, like you and me. They're not weirdos. I'll put 49. A column of photographs popped up of strange men in wire glasses and striped becollared shirts hanging over the folds of their stomachs. It looks like a lineup of serial killers, I said. How can they be single fathers, unless they've murdered the mothers? Yes, well, maybe that wasn't a very good search, Jude said briskly. How about this? She opened up the profile she'd made for me on OkCupid. Actually, when I looked, there were some really quite cute ones on there. But oh, the loneliness. The profiles giving away months or maybe years of heartbreak and disappointment and insult. Someone who'd actually picked as their username, "Is there anyone out there?" had as their profile, "I'm a nice normal guy who just wants a nice normal woman. If your photo is from 15 years ago, then move on. If you're fucked up, married, desperate, passive-aggressive, not a woman, shamelessly gold-digging, emotionally sadistic, superficial, self-obsessed,
illiterate, just looking for quick sex, just looking to indulge in endless streams of messaging then not meet, just looking to get a date to massage your ego and stand me up because you can't be bothered, then move on. And then there were the profiles from married men, quite openly saying they want uncomplicated sex. Why don't they just go on marriedaffair.co.uk? Sniffed Jude. Wednesday, 3rd of July, 2013. 8:30 a.m. Billy's football comic just dropped through the letterbox, and I took it downstairs saying, Billy, your match.com's arrived. KBO. Wednesday, 3rd of July, 2013, continued. £133. Negative thoughts, 5 million. Positive thoughts, 0. Bottles of fairy liquid drunk, 0. You see, could be worse. 9:15 p.m. Right. Super. Is school concert tomorrow and is going to be perfectly fine. Mabel is staying at Rebecca's, so I don't have to worry about keeping tabs on both of them at the same time. Of course, many, many of the fathers will be away on business, or perhaps busy tapping away on marriedaffair.co.uk. And even if Rockster was still around, he wouldn't have come to the school concert, would he? He'd have felt ridiculous with all those people who have children and are so much older than him. 9:30 p.m. Just looked at news online. Whole royal baby frenzy is not helping. Perfect young couple of Rockster's age, starting life, doing everything perfectly in the perfect way and at the perfect time. 9:45 p.m. Went up to check on Billy and Mabel. Mummy, said Billy. Will Daddy know I'm doing the concert? I think so, I whispered. Will I do it all right? Yes. I held his hand till he was asleep. There was a full moon again, and I watched it over the rooftops. What would it be like now if I was going to the summer concert with Mark?